Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Question with Pastor Adam. I have a special guest with us today. It's Leo. Hi, Leo.
How's it going?
Great. Leo and I have had some conversations before, and before, like, I was on Leo's show Conversations, and
yep,
just talked for like a long time, and yeah, we've already been talking, and we're like going into this thing talking.
So, yeah, we're hitting it, we're coming in hot right now.
Leo is bringing like the deconstruction of all of our binary systems before we even go live. So
I'm
so excited to have you, Leo, on One Question.
It's
always good to talk with you. And I'm going to do a little intro thing to One Question. So if I can remember, it's the new year, so I don't remember, like, it's been a while since I did it. This is One Question with Pastor Adam, and I'm a pastor to believers and doubters, to unfaithful Christians and faithful atheists. And Jesus wasn't afraid of questions, and neither are we here on One Question with Pastor Adam. And Leo is not afraid of questions either. And so if you have questions for our topic today, which is faith and transgender Christians, feel free to bring those in to the chat section. Leo and I started talking about doing this conversation about a week and a half ago,
yeah,
before the events of yesterday, that I'm still trying to process. And I know Leo is still trying to process too, but before we get into the conversation, Leo, can you tell people a little bit about yourself and also about the project Conversations Official that you're doing?
Absolutely. So the only flaw with One Question with Pastor Adam is that, like, I'm very, like, I grew up as a pastor's kid. Like, I'm not really wired to just do one question.
We got a lot of questions, yes, today.
Yeah, but we'll do at least two questions today.
Yeah.
But I actually, as I indicated to in my little shtick, I grew up as a pastor's kid. From the age of 5, I understood myself to be a person who was called to ministry. I went to college and majored in pastoral ministry. But the big wrinkle in my plan was that I was actually assigned female at birth. So all of these things that I was doing as a biological female. I was also just terrible at presenting as a female. So I was a very, very like tomboyish type of girl. So I came to understand myself to be a lesbian between my junior and senior year of college. I went to a conservative Christian Bible college that did so well with stewardship that it had to file bankruptcy and close one of its campuses. I don't have any grief or bitterness there. It's not for today. But so I came out between my junior and senior year and was henceforth stripped of any leadership roles I had, which were a bunch on campus, any worship leading, any public speaking, any small group leading. And they actually went a layer further and put me in a single so that I couldn't spread the gay. But the joke's on them, because I had a studio apartment with my girlfriend for senior year. Come at me now, Naya.
Right,
come
yeah.
at me now. And then, after I graduated, I was definitely in the throes of coming out. And I think that I, at the time, underestimated the amount of emotional toll that took on myself. And so I did try. I applied to some churches. I applied to some programs. I applied to some seminaries, but it just wasn't right. So I kind of moved back from New York City to rural Western New York / Western Pennsylvania. Weird flex. And then I did try to engage with the Episcopal Church a little bit, but it didn't quite jive. It didn't work out. There was some things that just kind of prohibited me from being involved in ministry on a level of an ordained person in the Episcopal Church. And I was really disenfranchised by that. So I kind of took almost 7 years off from church, to be honest. And for those of you who didn't catch the subtext of that, I was a person who grew up in Christian culture as well as Christian church, because I've come to understand that I was part of both. So I grew up in that whole context. That was my world. That was my family. That was my friends. And moreover, that was my deeply held sense of vocation. And so for me to come out, it put all of those things. I knew that when I came out, I was risking losing every one of those things. Mm. And I did. I'm glad to say that I have my mom back in my life. My brother has always been supportive. I have relationships with my mom's side of the family, but that was something that took some building and it took some work. I will say that just this past year, it's been 10 years since I came out. And just this past year, my mom called me and she apologized for how she reacted when I came out. And she said, I failed you once and I'll fail you again in the future, but please know that you never lost me. I never stopped loving you. I just didn't do it well. And I mean, I was like weeping. That was a decade in the making and I never thought it would happen. But just this year, I really felt a turn. I got an apology from my mom. I got an apology from some of my friends who are on my soccer team, which for me was a big part of my life. So some really apologies I never thought I'd get came to me this year. And I had been talking to my counselor regularly, cause I think counseling is fantastic. And, out of nowhere, we were talking about faith and stuff. And then out of nowhere, I decided to pop off and make a video about, LGBTQ people and the evangelical church. I was standing in front of my business, in small town, Western New York, and I made a video at 8 minutes. It's like 8 minutes and 37 seconds or something, but it's the 8 minutes and 37 seconds I can never go back from. That video got 10,000 views. I've never gone viral before. And it was just insane the amounts of stuff that came in from that video, just people resonating with it, people commenting, people stopping me in multiple drive-thrus in my town to tell me thank you, because the video that I made was what they needed. And ironically enough, a local pastor from a non-denominational evangelical church that has absolutely no covering or theological grounding responded to my video because, me thinks he does protest too much. Yeah. So apparently he was very triggered by this. So he made a series of videos misgendering me and saying that I was inciting violence and calling me a heretic and calling me hateful and all of these things. So I made a video back just with the points of the actual biblical points about, LGBTQ people. And he also was saying that Black Lives Matter was evil. And so my whole tenet was you cannot say that Black Lives Matter is evil and that LGBTQ people are going to the hell and be saying that you're operating the love of Christ. You simply cannot. And I am done putting up with that. I don't know if I even wanted to come back to the church, but I noticed that this summer there was no clergy presence at our protest.
Yeah.
And I said, if they won't do it, I will. So I bought a collar and I reminded myself that I had the theological education and mm-hmm. I stepped up. And I think that the healing that I received from the apologies that I got this summer were very sustaining. I think I had finally emotionally worked through enough of my religious abuse in counseling. And I'm really happy with the way things are going. Out of that story has come conversations. Conversations actually started 10 years ago. It's a project of mine that's an outcropping of my capstone project for my pastoral ministry degree. So the capstone project was, if you could design a ministry, what would it be? As someone who has a hard time with the idea of church and sometimes the word Christian, and someone who understands themselves to be a pastor, like, how do you reconcile, I'm supposed to be a pastor, but, screw church, right? That's weird. So Conversations is a spiritually minded small group. In 2010, we started meeting. Back then, we would do it in person. In the age of COVID, now we meet online. But basically, I facilitate a spiritually minded conversation about life and the intersection of spirituality and life, whatever that means, unencumbered by any framework. And it's been fantastic so far. I've since relaunching it, rebranding it, giving it a new face this year. We do a weekly video series. So if you want to catch us on Facebook at Conversations Official, we do a weekly video Sundays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a Facebook group where people are dialoguing regularly throughout the week, and I drop special videos in there. We have a podcast. We have a YouTube channel. We have a merch shop. We've got it all, and you can find all of these things you can find at conversationsofficial.com. So currently right now, we're also working on getting a transcription service going so that we can be intersectional, because I've come to the realization personally that being intersectional and being interfaith and being accessible don't happen by accident. And so I'm working to get money together to do live captioning for our videos and provide transcripts for the podcast. So.
That's brilliant. That's awesome. I have so many. This is only one question, but I have so many questions.
I'll allow you to.
Okay, good. You meant you. So you were you. a lot of us have experienced being wounded by the church.
Absolutely.
And we have so many different responses to being wounded by it. And what was it about the church that brought you back? What was it that the church basically said no to your identity?
Yeah.
So what was it about faith, God, whatever, that you were like, I'm not going to give up on this thing called church?
That's a great question. And I'm kind of glad you ask it, because I'm a verbal processor. And so a lot of times when I'm podcasting, like, I'm along for the ride with the rest of you, because I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth next. You know what I mean? Because that's how I work through things. And so this is something that I'm thinking through deeply in my life right now, because it's antithetical. Like, it doesn't make sense. But for me, when I think about what I believe and when I think about the non-negotiables of what I believe, because make no mistake, when you're coming out and it's going to cost you your community and your family, you have to decide what you're not going to give up on. And so I know for me, the overarching ideals of hope and peace and love are the things that I keep coming back to. And there are moments where I have experienced transcendence and a transcendent, like I've had a transcendent encounter with something intangible that has indelibly changed me, given me hope. I, not to be like too crazy, like I used to be a little Pentecostal, but I definitely have been sick and someone has prayed and then I have been better. And there are just things that I can't explain. I have a lot of friends who are atheists. Actually, I've had a couple atheists on conversations and I have a couple more coming up because we end up majoring on the same majors, right? But for me, there's just some sort of transcendence there. And the framework that I understand it through is Christianity. And so at first I just couldn't give up on it because of those feelings. And then this summer I got a little indignant and I said, I'm not going to give up on it. Like, you're going to come to me, right? Like, you're going to come to me. I'm going to set the tone of this conversation. I'm not groveling at your altar anymore. I'm coming and I'm saying, you explain these Bible verses. You explain me. Because for so long people were like, you can't be gay and a Christian. And I was like, hi, you know what I mean? Like, not to blow up your worldview, but I'm gay and a Christian. Yeah. Do with that what you will, but you at least can't say I don't exist. And that's kind of where I came to this summer, was like, this is as much my culture as it is anybody else's. And so even if I don't claim the faith anymore, I will claim my Christian culture. And through that, I've begun to see these sort of transcendent experiences happen, you know, so.
We've got some comments. Raylene says, hey, Leo, you have a church, a special ministry, just the way it began way back when, no building required. A lot of hearts.
I love it.
A lot of hearts going on here.
Yeah, Raylene has actually been up in my inbox, very supportive and encouraging. And like, I can't tell you how much that matters, because it's not an easy task that I'm undertaking. So I really appreciate the support, Raylene.
It's. Yeah. Dakota says, yeah, the dude's hate was gross back
when. Oh, yeah.
That's.
Yeah. Dakota is a local LGBTQ teen who has seen, well, a young adult at this point, who has seen all this hate unfold in our community.
So when you went, when your video went viral, what was it about your video that you think really touched people, resonated with people?
I think that there's a lot of people that have been crushed under the boot of evangelicalism. And we've just kind of accepted this American exceptionalism, neoliberalism, patriarchal, white supremacist evangelicalism for so long. But the lived experience of so many people is that that system is flawed and it's awful and it's abusive. And so I think I touched on something, especially in my local context, which is a town of under 14,000 people, that 75% or more vote red. You know, most of the population is there is like, more people are in retirement than are younger. Families are moving away from our area. Like, we are a small area that is like the second lowest in terms of income level and health expectancy in our state. And I think what happened was I stood up in the middle of this sea of red and this sea of non-denominational evangelicalism. I said, hold the phone. Ugh. And I think people were like, oh, dude, that dude's crazy, right? Because not only, like, I stood up against evangelicalism. There is a ton of an evangelical presence in our area. And that evangelical presence here, because by proxy of the pastors, is also very connected to law enforcement. And so I stood up in the middle of a time that was total social upheaval. And I said, like, hold the phone. And I think that's what got people looking, because they're like, this is going to be a train wreck. Like, I think that's why half the people were watching. And then the other half the people were like crying, and they're like, oh my God, someone else like me. You know what I mean?
what did you say that got people to cry and be like, someone else like me? What is the essence of your message that resonated?
I think a lot of people that sit in evangelical pews or padded chairs, because we don't want to be too traditional, on Sundays, I think a lot of people are trying to fit in this system that is innately not made to fit them. Like, evangelicalism and religion in general is not made to make you feel better about yourself. Religion, white supremacy, capitalism, patriarchy all depend on you being innately flawed and needing something that only they can give. And so I think a lot of people on Sunday mornings are sitting there in these congregations. And they're like, I am flawed. I am terrible. I am failing. And they might be gay, or they might just be like an inconsistently gracious human being. You know what I mean? And so when I stood up and said, like, you cannot say that you love people and be racist and homophobic, I think people were like, holy shit. Crap, this guy is challenging the system that tries to set itself up as infallible. It was a little David and Goliath, I think. And so I think people were touched, like, hey, someone's speaking about me. Someone's fighting for me. Someone is acknowledging the pain and trauma that I have felt. And I know it because I felt it. You know what I mean?
I don't want to give evangelicalism too much attention.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
There is some deconstructing that I want to do, but as we saw yesterday with evangelicals, I was going to say Christians, but
right.
Evangelicals coming in and saying, holding up Jesus saves.
Jesus saves signs.
Signs as these are domestic terrorists.
Domestic terrorists.
Going
absolutely.
Into the Capitol building and trying to stop things. Vast majority, if not all of them, are white. This is white evangelicalism you are talking about, and that should be deconstructed. We have just a little bit of time left.
Yeah.
As we're deconstructing that toxic white supremacist theology, mm-hmm. what is the alternative? What is the thing that we build up? Do we build something up in its place? Is that the right framework to have?
That's the question. Right?
In opposition. I don't even want to say in opposition to it, because
just like what next?
Yes, that's the question. What next?
Just because there's still a whole debate. Like, I've heard a lot of, especially African American people, just be completely frustrated with the term of like racial reconciliation, because the idea of reconciliation implies that there was a healthy relationship before. And let's be real, America and Western Protestant evangelicalism has never had a good relationship to racial relations. And so I think the question is, do we rebuild? Do we abolish? Do we fix? Like, what do we do? But I really think that one of the answers, and one of the reasons I wanted to come on here, is that, like, I challenge the accepted norm in my area by existing, right? And Jesus is here. God is here. And if God is here, some folks have some theological reckoning to do. And just as God is here, in this genderqueer, tattooed human being who likes to swear a lot, but can also quote most of the Bible to you, right? God, just like God is here, you know, God was in Africa before the colonizers came, right? And so I don't know what the answer is big picture, but I do know that it involves listening to the margins. Because if you look at Jesus's birth story, Jesus's orientation in the world, Jesus was intentionally positioned to experience the life of poverty from the beginning and from the inside. Like, God came to and for the margins. So if we're going to have any reclamation when it comes to religion, and I mean, even all Abrahamic religions, you know what I mean? Western religions, we have to listen to and through the margins. And if you're centered in the conversation, then you need to decenter yourself and you need to listen to the margins. And if you're in the margins, you need to take heart because divinity came to and through the margins, you know?
Amen to that. Sunday I'm going to be preaching on John the Baptist, who goes away from the central.
Yes, he does. Place,
the temple. Cause he says, God's not here anymore. Cause you're all corrupted it. And that is the place of conservative religion in first century Judaism.
Yes, it is. It's the power structure.
John the Baptist says, God's not here anymore. So we're going out to the wilderness, to the margins, as you're saying, Leo, and that's where we're going to find God. All the people are invited. All the people come, right?
Philip's baptized in a puddle. He didn't need a mikveh. The man at the pool of Bethsaida was told to walk away, right? Like, so many people find divinity, and further over, they find baptism. And that's a whole concept to unpack, but they find it walking away from the power structures of the day. And that's not to say that Judaism was bad, because I don't want to be anti-Semitic. But what I am saying is that they were finding divinity and purpose and power and healing outside of the power structures. Not necessarily outside of that faith, but outside of the literal structures that signified, you know, religion in the day, like the temples and the mikvahs and all of those things.
It is inherently Jewish,
yes,
to have this prophetic tradition. So John the Baptist and Jesus, they're just fully within this Jewish strand of the
prophet. They're Jewish.
Remember the prophet Jeremiah, who was like, hey guys, the temple is like corrupt. Temple's corrupt again. This is a thoroughly Jewish thing to do that John the Baptist and that Jesus do. So
absolutely.
It's awesome and good stuff. And the last question that I have for you, you give me hope. Your mother gives me hope. In these times, one of the themes that I've been talking about the last few months have been family relationships, in part because we're all feeling the strain of since November and before November. The last 4 years have been a huge strain on families, my family included. Can you tell us a little bit about your mom and how she came to this transformation? Repentance means change your mind. Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like your mom had a change of mind in where she was and your relationship with her. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. My mom is so dope. There's so many moments where we butted heads, but like, it's a blessing and curse raising a free spirit, free thinking child. Right. And to be honest, raising me would have been terrifying. Right. Because I was like, let's stick some dynamite in the establishment and blow it up. That's just how I've always been. And that's terrifying to parent. You know what I mean? But my mom is just she's flawed, and she's passionate, and she's, intelligent, and she's artistic, and she's a little hot headed, and she's all of these things. But the thing that my mom does so incredibly well is she's like a really good mom. Like, she can be struggling on a human level, but she's a really good mom. And so I think, once again, processing out loud as I do, I think what happened with the Jill is that her sense of love for me overrode any other concern. And let me make it very clear to you that my mom grew up in evangelicalism that was rooted in Southern Ohio, right? So Bible Belt Christianity. And she said, like, I don't know if I'll ever understand you being trans, right? I will probably use your birth name. For me, that's not a non-negotiable. That's okay in this instance, because she said, I love you, and I will love you, and I will come through for you. And even before she had apologized, like, there was a year where my wife and I were struggling to do Christmas for our family. We have 5 kids, and Elle worked as a hairdresser at the time, and I was an out-of-work social worker, so like extra, extra poor. and we were struggling to do Christmas, and my family went out and bought a Rubbermaid tote full of presents for every one of my children. And they bought a jacket for each one of them, and they bought another tote of cleaning supplies and another tote of food. And that was just my biological family, like my aunts and uncles, coming together and deciding to take this tangible action of love. And so it's not perfect and it is flawed, but I can tell you what, I know for sure that my mom would come through for me. And I think that that's what draws me back to faith, because I have to, like, I'm admittedly a theist. Like, even if I'm having a conversation with someone who is an atheist, like, I'm a little golden retriever of a theist. Like, I just believe, you know. But if we can major on that same major of love overriding anything, I think we've tapped into something.
And that's love overriding anything. That's fantastic. That is the frame of mind that I am going to have in response to the horrific events yesterday. Yeah. And I think that's a good frame for me to have as we begin 2021. So thank you for that, Leo. We've got a couple of other comments. Let's see here. Raylene says, so right on. And Willow says, hashtag mom goals.
She has mom goals. She's a great mom, right? She's a little crazy, right? But she's a lot of loving, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like in Stranger Things. Well, I don't know if everybody's seen Stranger Things, but you know, the guys in the gang are like hanging out and Eleven's there and she like does something absolutely insane. And the guys from the gang look at this other like intruder and they're like, she's crazy and she's our friend. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, she's crazy and she's my mom. She's my mom. Don't mess with her. You know what I'm saying?
That's funny. Sander says amen. Sander also says Amira Stanley says that's dope. And Courtney says, Leo, you make me smile. I was just going to say, I've been like, smiling throughout this whole conversation, which I always do with Leo. So if you want more conversations with Leo, go check Leo out at conversationsofficial.com.
.com.
You can check Leo out there. Willow says all of us moms are a little crazy. You know, I might be able to say the same thing about us dads.
I was just going to say, I got the best of both worlds as a non-binary parent, because I'm very maternal. And like my wife will say that all the time. Like she says all the time that I'm like more maternal than her possibly. And let me tell you, like my kid could bite me and write a letter comparing me to Hitler, both of which have been done.
Uh-huh.
But if you mess with them, I will cut you.
Okay. Okay. There we go.
It's a parenting thing, man. It's like they can do anything to you, and then you still are like, yeah, let me do that for you, kid. You know?
Papa Bear, the mama bear comes out. Yeah. That's how we roll. So
absolutely.
Thank you everyone for watching and for your comments. Valette says, I love that so much. So yeah, it's awesome. So thank you, Leo, and always a pleasure to talk with you. And friend, we will be back next week with one question with Pastor Adam. Until then, peace be with you all.